Next up, number 659. Yes, it's a prime number taking place on the 21st day of the 21st year of the 21st century. Not only that, it's 12121. And read backwards, it's 12121. Let's get started.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the next step with Father Vodskin. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vodskin's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
That's right. You heard it. I heard it. The whole world heard it. You couldn't avoid it. There it was. He said it.
And if we're willing to stand in the other person's shoes, as my mom would say, just for a moment, stand in their shoes.
That's right. I've been telling you all these years. It's the way to go. It's the way to live. I've been telling you. And now you heard it from newly inaugurated 46th President of the United States of America, telling you that the way, the path is walking in the shoes of others.
Because here's the thing about life. There's no accounting for what fate will deal you. Some days, when you need a hand, there are other days when we're called to lend a hand. That's how it has to be. That's what we do for one another. And if we are this way, our country will be stronger, more prosperous, more ready for the future. And we can still disagree. My fellow Americans, in the work ahead of us, we're going to need each other. We need all our strength to persevere through this dark winter.
It was a very touching inauguration. Many factors involved in it, especially what we've been through here in the United States last few weeks, especially this threat to democracy we saw. This horrible display, almost like a banana republic, people getting up and trashing one of the most sacred shrines of democracy, namely the Washington, D.C. Capitol building. And on that same platform, we saw the 46th president take the oath of office and pledge his allegiance to the Constitution and to do good, basically to do good. I was very, very moved for several reasons, and I want to share those with you. And you're going to say, well, wait a minute. This isn't a political broadcast. You're right, it isn't. And I think when you start hearing what I'm going to be playing for you, you're going to say, yeah, it isn't political. I'm not doing this for political reasons. Listen to what's being said, and you'll see a very, very distinct message that comes across clean and clear about helping, about serving one another. And what could be a better message to be given, especially this week where we just commemorated the slain civil rights leader, Dr. Martin Luther King, and we talked about service. I'm going to tell you about that retreat too, because it was a very, very special one for all of us who attended, who participate. But for me, who I seldom get this kind of chance that I had over this past weekend, so I'll come clean. I'll tell you about it. I'll tell you about what happened and what was very special for a priest running a retreat. But let me back up right now. I want to share with you some thoughts about the Biden inauguration. And no, it's not going to be political. You can believe whatever you want. You're welcome to turn this off if you want. But no, it's not political. It's about some very spiritual things that were said. Spiritual, religious. Yes, religious. And godly things that were being said. You know, President Biden, I found out just yesterday, he was going to be a priest. And there's a beautiful story about him listening to John Kennedy, President John Kennedy, and being inspired at that time. But his religious background, his religious beliefs certainly come to play in the things that he talks about, certainly come to play in the direction that he's moving. And that speaks to me. For instance, the youth poet laureate, this young girl, Amanda Gorman, never heard of her. Oh, to me, she stole the show. First of all, youth. Second of all, her ability to articulate. I mean, I get jealous when I hear people like that. Their ability to put together words that can take you beyond yourself, can inspire, and can allow you to dream. I mean, it is beautiful. It is really beautiful the way that they are able to do it. Yes, I get jealous. I say, wow, can you believe every single word is talking? Every single word is crying. Every single word is filled with laughter. I mentioned John Kennedy's inauguration. I believe Robert Frost was the poet laureate who read a poem at his inauguration. Maya Angelou at Bill Clinton's inauguration. And now, today, we meet Amanda Gorman. Wow, how beautiful. And on the remote chance that you're saying, like, wow, how could that be? How could words inspire, get you to dream? What fantastic words could she have spoken that she's getting all this praise and attention? Well, let me share it with you.
Mr. President, Dr. Biden, Madam Vice President, Mr. Emhoff, Americans, and the world. When day comes, we ask ourselves, where can we find light in this never-ending shade? The loss we carry, a sea we must wade. We've braved the belly of the beast. We've learned that quiet isn't always peace. In the norms and notions of what just is, isn't always just is. And yet the dawn is ours before we knew it. Somehow we do it. Somehow we've weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished. We, the successors of a country and a time where a skinny black girl descended from slaves and raised by a single mother can dream of becoming president only to find herself reciting for one. And yes, we are far from polished, far from pristine, but that doesn't mean we are striving to form a union that is perfect. We are striving to forge our union with purpose, to compose a country committed to all cultures, colors, characters, and conditions of man. And so we lift our gazes not to what stands between us, but what stands before us. We close the divide because we know to put our future first. We must first put our differences aside. We lay down our arms so we can reach out our arms to one another. We seek harm to none and harmony for all. Let the globe, if nothing else, say this is true. That even as we grieved, we grew. That even as we hurt, we hoped. That even as we tired, we tried. That we'll forever be tied together, victorious. Not because we will never again know defeat, but because we will never again sow division. Scripture tells us to envision that everyone shall sit under their own vine and fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. If we're to live up to our own time, then victory won't lie in the blade, but in all the bridges we've made. That is the promised glade, the hill we climb, if only we dare it. Because being American is more than a pride we inherit. It's the past we step into and how we repair it. We've seen a force that would shatter our nation rather than share it. would destroy our country if it meant delaying democracy. And this effort very nearly succeeded. But while democracy can be periodically delayed, it can never be permanently defeated. In this truth, in this faith we trust, for while we have our eyes on the future, history has its eyes on us. This is the era of just redemption. We feared it at its inception. We did not feel prepared to be the heirs of such a terrifying hour, but within it we found the power to author a new chapter, to offer hope and laughter to ourselves. So while once we asked, how could we possibly prevail over catastrophe? Now we assert, how could catastrophe possibly prevail over us? We will not march back to what was, but move to what shall be, a country that is bruised but whole, benevolent but bold, fierce and free. We will not be turned around or interrupted by intimidation, because we know our inaction and inertia will be the inheritance of the next generation. Our blunders become their burdens. But one thing is certain. If we merge mercy with might and might with right, then love becomes our legacy and change our children's birthright. So let us leave behind a country better than the one we were left. With every breath from my bronze-pounded chest, we will raise this wounded world into a wondrous one. We will rise from the gold-limbed hills of the West. We will rise from the wind-swept Northeast, where our forefathers first realized revolution. We will rise from the lake-rimmed cities of the Midwestern states. We will rise from the sun-baked South. We will rebuild, reconcile, and recover in every known nook of our nation, in every corner called our country. Our people, diverse and beautiful, will emerge battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light, if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
Do you agree with me? I mean, amazing. Amazing. I think she's 22 or 23 years old. Her ability to articulate, her ability to share a thought, and from the depths of her heart, you can tell that this is, you know, I always think about that every Lenten season when we pronounce the prayers of St. Gregory Naregatsi. And he starts off with this phrase, Ichorot Sardits Choska Nastudzo, from the depths of my heart I speak with God. And I always think about the visual. I try to do the visual of that. Like, where is the depth of the heart? Is it a physical location? Like, we always think about the cartoon image of a heart being this shaped, you know what a heart looks like. Until you look at a real heart and it's like blub 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 blub. It's kind of like a mass, right? So what is Naregatsi talking about from the depths of my heart, a conversation with God? And I always think about this, and listening to this young girl, Amanda Gorman, I got it. It made sense. There is a location, the depth of your heart. And that depth of the heart is an actual location. Not necessarily definable on a map or on an x-ray of your body, but it's one that you can feel and see. And that is a completely mystical idea. This is one that falls right into armodoxy. I want you to just listen to what I just said. You can feel and you can see, but it's not visible on the x-ray. And that feeling, seeing without actually putting your finger on it, that's really what the mystery is all about. And I sense that as she was reciting this poem, it was moving us. It brought us to tears. It was that moment where you realize that here is a young soul. Here is a young soul who is sharing the feelings, the movement of her heart, And it's not a lump movement. It's a movement that's talking about what's going on in our surroundings and in our world. And in that sense, it becomes prophetic, right? Speaking for the time. You know, many times throughout the years when I've tried to explain this idea of mystery, of the mystic qualities of orthodoxy, in other words, to be able to understand without reading, to be able to comprehend without hearing, you know, to use that sixth sense. You know, in Eastern traditions, there was a George Harrison had come out with this beautiful lyric, I remember it, "Without going out of my door, I can see all things on earth, and without looking out my window, I can know the ways of heaven." Well, where is that sense? How can you look out? It's not about the eyes. It's about that inner light, about that inner self, about the God that is within us. And I think we discount that so often, that we have the ability to connect to something so great. This is, I think, the one thing about Armenian Armodoxy, that I cannot stress enough. In fact, if you go back from the very beginning of the Next Step, it was for this reason that we created that Next Step, so that we could understand that it's not about reading just a bunch of volumes that you come to faith. It's not about praying only. It's about living a faith, that gets articulated, yes, with our words, but also with our actions. And I felt that yesterday. I felt that, and I think that this young poet was able to articulate that so beautifully, much better than I ever possibly can or will, you know, but she did it. And can we take something from there and learn? Learn not necessarily how to put together a poem, but learn that there is more to what we see out there, more to life and what we experience than what our senses give us. It's not about the five senses, it's about six, seventh sense. It's about other feelings that we have. And I think when you walk into an Armenian church, that's what's the most exciting experience that you can have. It's that mystical. It's not about going to church to hear what the sermon is going to be around. It's not about going and checking out if the choir is going to sing, but to put all of that together, visually being hit with all the beauty around you, audibly you're hearing all that, your olfactory senses, you're picking up the incense. And it's taking you back to places that you could only imagine, but beyond all of your senses. And then tasting, of course, of the Eucharist, about hugging and touching. And unfortunately, this is one of the great losses of the pandemic era. But touching and the kiss of peace, the actual kiss of coming together and expressing the love that you have. And you know, we hit upon this very briefly during the MLK retreat last week, but it's something that I've shared with you many, many times. It's about, in Armenian, there's only one singular word for love. It's not about breaking it down into eros, filial, and agape, but it's said. And in there we find eros, filial, and agape. And so when you get into the church and you feel all these things coming to you, you feel them not with your senses, but with your heart. "From the depths of my heart, I speak with God," says Narigatsi. And I felt that. I felt that opportunity. Now, I told you that there was many parts of this inauguration, a seemingly on the outside political event, but it stirred up emotions that I cannot describe. And I wasn't alone. I spoke to many people who had tears running down their eyes. And perhaps it's because of what we've gone through, what we're being through, what we are going through right now, or perhaps there was something a little bit higher. And I always opt for that latter option, because I do think that there are different ways by which God speaks to us. And certainly the minister at the very end, I can't remember if he was a priest, I'll check that out when we play him. I want to share with you the benediction at the end. I believe he was an Episcopal minister, or Anyway, I will definitely check him out. I want you to listen to this beautiful prayer that was given as a benediction and listen to the words articulated.
As a nation and people of faith gathered in this historical moment, let us unite in prayer. God, we gather under the beauty of your holiness and the holiness of your beauty. We seek your face, your smile, your warm embrace. We petition you once more in this celebration. We pray for divine favor upon our president, Joseph R. Biden, and our First Lady, Dr. Jill Biden, and their family. We further ask that you would extend the same favor upon our Vice President, Kamala D. Harris, and our second gentleman, Doug Emhoff, and their family. More than ever, they and our nation need you. We need you, for in you we discover our common humanity. In our common humanity, we will seek out the wounded and bind their wounds. We will seek healing for those who are sick and diseased. We will mourn our dead. We will befriend the lonely, the least, and the left out. We will share our abundance with those who are hungry. We will do justly to the oppressed, acknowledge sin, and seek forgiveness, thus grasping reconciliation. In discovering our humanity, we will seek the good in and for all our neighbors. We will love the unlovable, remove the stigma of the so-called untouchables. We will care for our most vulnerable, our children, the elderly, emotionally challenged, and the poor. We will seek rehabilitation beyond correction. We will extend opportunity to those locked out of opportunity. We will make friends of our enemies. We will make friends of our enemies. People, your people, shall no longer raise up weapons against one another. We will rather use our resources for the national good and become a beacon of life and goodwill to the world. And neither shall we learn hatred anymore. We'll lie down in peace and not make our neighbors afraid. In you, O God, we discover our humanity. In our humanity, we discover our commonness. Beyond the difference of color, creed, origin, political party, ideology, geography, and personal preferences, we'll become greater stewards of your environment, preserving the land, reaping from it a sustainable harvest, and securing its wonder and miracle-giving power for generations to come. This is our benediction, that from these hallowed grounds, where slaves labored to build this shrine and citadel to liberty and democracy, let us all acknowledge from the indigenous Native American to those who recently received their citizenship, from the African American to those whose foreparents came from Europe and every corner of the globe, from the wealthy to those struggling to make it, from every human being regardless of their choices, that this is our country. As such, teach us, O God, as such, teach us, O God, to live in it, love in it, be healed in it, and reconcile to one another in it, lest we miss kingdom's goal. To your glory, majesty, dominion, and power forever. Hallelujah. Glory, hallelujah. In the strong name of our collective faith, amen.
the benediction, which was offered at the inauguration yesterday of President Joseph Biden. That was the Reverend Sylvester Beeman from the Wilmington's Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church. There's a mouthful when we say Armenian Apostolic Orthodox Church. Whoa, people get, wow, too many adjectives. How about this one? Wilmington's Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church. Anyway, I know Episcopalians do have priests. This one identifies him as a minister. Whatever the case is, we're not looking at the ordination. We're looking at these beautiful words that were put together, that inspired, that brought us together and brought us and led us to pray for this president and pray for this presidency and pray for America. That's what those words are about. And interestingly enough, just last weekend, we had a retreat which looked at the ability to put those words together. We had a retreat, the Martin Luther King Jr. retreat, which looked at the prayers of Reverend King. And like I said, we're going to share that with you too. Coming up right after the song of the day. This was sent to me by our dear Maria. It is La Daniva. And it's from a mini concert that she gave. It's available on YouTube. And this is, it's very nice. It's beautiful fusion that puts together some Western instruments to some Eastern sounds and her beautiful voice on top of it. I hope you enjoy it.
나 캐시다 인시로 잡세 캐시다 인시로 잡세
That is Lada Neva doing a mini concert, and the concert goes on for about 12 minutes. I just selected one of the songs in the concert, in the mini concert. I will have a link on today's show notes. That's from Radio Nova. And you can listen to the entire concert and also some other links to learn more about this beautiful artist. And I want to thank Maria for sending it to us. It brought some of the festivity into the room, especially the one we are riding high on right now. Welcome back. We are talking about inspiration, dreams, poems, things that move us and inspire us, and get us to think beyond ourselves. Yeah, I guess that's what we're talking about, because it's all in the context of, yes, the inauguration, which took place yesterday. And before you start saying that, well, that's just a political event. And no. Yeah, it is a political event. It signals a new administration, a change of power, one which for us here in the United States was very worrisome. That would it be a peaceful exchange of power? And for all the years that we've known before it, yes, that's one of the greatest things about the United States democracy. There is a peaceful transfer of power, but that was touch and go just a couple weeks ago. And we saw what happened. And I think even more scary is what could have happened. And fortunately, thank God, it didn't happen. So we have a peaceful transfer of power. We celebrated yesterday. And in that celebration, we had some opportunities to really think beyond ourselves. In the inaugural address, which I played just a clip of, the In His Shoes portion, which spoke to my heart very, very deeply, sincerely. Susan and I were sitting there watching, and we go, yeah, that's us, you know, In His Shoes. He said it. But even more, the poem that was presented that day by this young poet laureate, and by the prayer that was offered, just kind of tells you that, you know, it's a different age today. Just the fact that President Biden stopped in the middle of his inaugural address and asked for a moment of silence on all those who have passed away because of COVID. And in so doing, he gave us all an opportunity to think that, yes, it's not just a political issue. There are people who are dying. There are families that are ruined. And that, to me, spoke volumes, because in my life in this last couple months, especially as a priest, the volume of funerals is unbelievable. It's taking its toll on all of us, not just the families, but on all of us, including us who have to administer to the families, because it's one right after the other, and it is not playing favorites. It's hitting everybody. And so it was just very special for me that he stopped in the middle of his inaugural address and remembered something by saying, "Let us have a moment of silence." And of course, that's, you know, you're able to do it any way you want. Have that moment of silence, say a prayer if you'd like, whatever you'd like to do. Now, along those same lines, these are words that inspire us, that move us. And over the past weekend, we had an opportunity to look at the Master Mover, Martin Luther King Jr. A civil rights leader, yes, but a reverend of the gospel, one who spoke and one who shared. And it was kind of an interesting weekend that we have. If you know, our In His Shoes Ministries hosts a Martin Luther King retreat every year. We've had all kinds of venues for this, but never have we had a virtual venue. In other words, we were all online. We never met, unfortunately, face to face, but we were able to meet. And at the very end, yes, we did have a quasi face to face in a Zoom meeting. But the entire object was to look at the prayer life and the prayers of Dr. King. And we augmented that with a few of his sermons where he talked about the power of God, the power of tapping into that power of God. And all of this was it was meant as an inspiration for us, especially finding ourselves at this point in history. Now, along those lines, as we were talking about that, of course, the most famous of his speeches, the one that gets heard every year on his holiday, the one that gets heard over and over again, is I Have a Dream speech. And I'm sure you've seen posters of it, you've heard it, you've heard references to it, perhaps you have even read it. It is truly an incredible speech, which spoke to the people back in 1963. That's almost 60 years ago. And it speaks to us now. And I think that's the timelessness. And I emphasized this in a couple of my lessons last week, the importance of timelessness when it comes to matters of faith, that it has to transcend certain times. It's not just about the civil rights movement, but it's about a nation in a pandemic in 2021, a nation that is suffering. There is a message here that goes beyond the circumstances. And that's the true power of faith, of a true religious message. It's not tied to the times, but it is constantly evolving with the times, and it is therefore speaking to the times. It is always true. And that's what we felt in listening to these speeches, into his words, into his prayers. And certainly if you do nothing else but listen to the I Have a Dream speech once every year, I mean, it's very important. At least once around the sun, you have an opportunity to recharge the batteries and say, yes, it is important to dream. Because in those dreams, you put your goals in front of you. These are the goals that I have. And as I see those goals in front of me, I dream of things that I can do, what I can be. And some of those may be utopian goals, impossible, but still dream it. And he was a dreamer, but he didn't end with just dreaming. And that's what I think the value of these Martin Luther King retreats are all about. It's not just this guy who comes out and talks about civil rights. It's somebody who makes us a better person because he draws attention to who we are and how we have to interact with our world and our circumstances. Now, interestingly enough, as we did the retreat last weekend, right after it was over, I was listening to a special on NPR about different things, and that's our national public radio over here. And there was a small little contest that they are holding on there. And part of it was to talk about the I Have a Dream speech. And the announcer said that the metaphors, political overtones, and themes of King that King employed to inspire people were actually in a poem called I Dream a World by Langston Hughes. Uh-huh. So there is a dream that inspires another dream. It's exactly what we're talking about what is it that inspires us and our need for these. And this is why when I turn to the Armenian Church and I turn to Armodoxy, I'm telling you, it's just beyond yourself. When you walk in, you recharge batteries. It's that 168 hours you have every week that God gives you to live, love, and enjoy. And then you have this one little hour that you have to give to church. It's not to go there to get something out, but it's exactly that, to give something back. And in that giving, that's where your batteries get recharged. And it's interesting because, you know, I do a show called WD168 for the diocese. It's like a little news program, a news clip of things that happened in the 168, in the 168 hours of the week. And I always started off by saying God gives us this 168 hours to live, love, and enjoy. But as because of what we were inspired by and what we were taught last weekend at our MLK retreat, I change the beginning of it. And so it's now God gives us 168 hours to live, love, and serve, because it's in that service that you find your enjoyment, you find your fulfillment. So that's a little bit of background as to why these things evolve. When I say about evolve, yeah, you know, when we started this show exactly a year ago, it was about the enjoyment and everything, but now we understand differently. We have evolved. We've had COVID come into our life. We've been through a war. We've seen different circumstances, Black Lives Matters. We've seen racial unrest. We've seen a bombing in Beirut. And we understand that it's not just about the enjoyment, but to serve, because we have an opportunity to serve and we find that enjoyment in return. This is where we dream. We dream of better tomorrows. So I learned about this poem by Langston Hughes, and I want to share it with you. This is a poem that upon which Dr. King, and I don't know the extent of the inspiration, but from what I heard, definitely he knew this poem. Let me share it with you. I dream a world where man no other man will scorn, where love will bless the earth and peace its paths adorn. I dream a world where all will know sweet freedom's way, where greed no longer saps the soul, nor avarice blights our day. A world I dream where black or white, whatever race you be, will share the bounties of the earth, and every man is free. Where wretchedness will hang its head, and joy like a pearl attends the needs of all mankind, of such I dream my world. That's Langston Hughes, A Dream a World. I Dream a World. And subsequently we heard the Dr. King speech 58 years ago. And because of that speech, because of his mark on society, he went on beyond just his community. He got the Nobel Peace Prize. He was a big advocate for peace in Vietnam. But most importantly, he was a minister of Jesus Christ. And that wasn't just words, but it was a means by which he understood life to have meaning. In other words, through non-violent resistance, we are able to bring about the greatest changes in our life. And that ultimate change is to find love and harmony and find peace in this world. So we had a beautiful opportunity to share together. It was interesting because we had a few people that were from outside, and actually from down under, Australia way. And I asked them, how does this grab you that we did this MLK retreat? And their comments to me were the most fascinating, because this is where you talk about familiarity breeds contempt. For us, Martin Luther King Jr. is somebody we grew up with, we knew about, we've heard about, we have a holiday, and so much so that the holiday now signals sales, just like Christmas. There are Christmas sales, just like Thanksgiving. There are Thanksgiving sales. Now there's Martin Luther King sales for mattresses and for different household items that you could have. Yes, the MLK sale is on this weekend. You could buy a car for certain prices, you know? Okay. Familiarity breeds contempt. Yeah, you're so familiar with it that now it's just, we're contemptuous of it. And much like Christmas, when we sit around and we talk about the commercialization, well, why is it commercialized? Well, people got tired of talking about the story of Christmas. Like, how many times can you talk about Joseph and Mary and the manger and the babe in the manger? And it lost its relevance to life today. And that's one of the powers that Dr. King possessed. He was able to take that message of Jesus, whether it was Joseph and Mary in the manger, whether it was Jesus at age 12, whether it was Jesus getting baptized, crucified, or resurrection, each one of those historic events reverberated in the life of people today. And that there is the power of the message. But to ask somebody who is not from America, what does that mean to you? You get to see a different perspective. And it was very fascinating for me because it's not the same perspective that I have. And so as much as we say something is timeless, we have to remember that everything is created has its own time and circumstances by which it is viewed. And this is what I've shared with you many times. The Bible is true, but to say that it is factual, there are different ways that people are approaching it. And hence you have this entire mix-mash of people understanding that they are Christian, and yet they might be diametrically opposed from one another ideologically, but they say that they are Christian. Well, how can that be? Well, because that Christ message means different things to those people. And as I've shared with you many times, we have to understand common ideas of metaphor. The other day, one of our priests, dear friend of mine, priest, was struck down by COVID. He's in recovery right now, and I was called to go and talk to the children at the day school, so to take his place. I went and I met with the kids there, and you look at these young kids, these new faces, and you need to share with them at a level that will be understandable to them. You can't talk about the complexities of crucifixion and resurrection when people don't even have that experience. You know, he's a kindergartner, he's a first grader. So, but you can talk about the idea of crucifixion and resurrection in terms of, simple things of bad and good, and the power of good being, it's always better to be good because the good is always going to win. And so simplifying, making it accessible to people and during their times. I've shared with you some of the metaphors that we have in Armenian. If somebody irritates you so much that they're talking, like, and I hope nobody's taking offense to my talking right now and applying this to me, but maybe so. Somebody talks so much in Armenian, we say, Kuluchas Artugets. He literally, it means he spoke so much that he ironed my head. But that's not what it means. It means that I'm just so sick and tired of this man talking. I'm sick and tired of him talking because my head's hurting. It feels like an iron went through it. Now, 100 years from now, 200 years from now, when irons are no longer available and people are pressing their clothes in different ways, perhaps through a new device, and people don't know what the iron is except in a history book, and then they see it and they say, oh, this man said his head was being ironed, it must mean that somebody came over and took an iron and just hit it on his head, because that's what that device looks like. It's kind of sharp on the end and it's flat. So that guy's face probably got flattened by this guy's iron. That doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that. And when we do that with the Bible, when you go to the Bible and says, this is what it means, without putting it in the context of the circumstances, you're doing a disservice to the words that God has given us to inspire us. And in so saying that, I hope you now understand why sometimes I get excited about things like, dates and numbers. Yeah, today is January 21 in the year 2021. Written out is 121, which is read the same way forward and backward. And in fact, for the next 10 days, you have an opportunity to do that. Read it in both directions. Now, does that put soup on the table? Does that make you a better person? No. It gets your mind to wander a little bit. And you start seeing beauty in patterns. Something like the pattern of language, a very famous philosophy of architecture back, I'd say, 1970s. Yeah, well, I just remember there was a good website about that, too. I'll put a website link on it, too. It's about looking at beauty, at seeing beauty. Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. What was the end about that? What did he come out with? Came out about beauty, about finding that. That's the zen of it, right? Anyway, I'm going to end it right there today, okay? And there's so much more I want to talk about and share with you, but I do have a fun announcement coming up in just a couple moments, okay? So here's Susie to make her announcement. I'll be back in a few.
Susie here again, popping in to say thank you to you, our listeners. We are thankful for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. We are grateful to be able to touch so many lives and create lasting friendships. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world and look forward to your continued support. Thank you and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, and thank you to all of you, our listeners, our supporters. I want to tell you, everything we talk about throughout the show is always recorded and offered to you in the show notes. So please take advantage of those show notes, check out some of those links, and share the link that takes you to In His Shoes. I don't know where you listen to it. There's so many different places. It comes out on a blog. It comes up, of course, at the mothership inhisshoes.org. It's available on Facebook, on social media, and on the podcast catchers such as Apple's podcast, Blueberry, and Stitcher Radio. So many places that you could listen, but wherever you do listen, please share that with friends and let friends get involved. Let them hook up to the next step. I want to tell you about something exciting, March 6th. I want you to write that down, because what we did last week was also an experiment. We had the virtual In His Shoes Martin Luther King retreat. It was the first time we had done it virtually, because we wanted to try it, and we also wanted to see if it could be successful. Can we do other retreats, other conferences? Well, we're coming up. March 6th, we're going to have Reclaim 2021. This is a program we started at the Western Diocese back in 2017. And this would have been our fifth year had it not been for the pandemic, where we had to cancel 2020's event. Actually, we canceled it exactly a week before it was ready to start. We had lockdown orders, and we just figured we couldn't pull it off. We are prepared this time, and we are making our plan A a virtual event, plan B being a person-to-person, which right now is out of the question. So it is going to be a virtual event, which means everybody can get involved, and that's one of the pluses of doing a virtual event. So mark down March 6th. It's going to be an all-day event, beginning at 9 a.m. Pacific time and ending at 4 o'clock. It'll be presided by His Eminence Archbishop Hovnan Derderian, the Primate of the Western Diocese. And it will be around a topic that I picked out. I hope you like it. It's called Reclaiming Faith in the Post-Pandemic World. Wow. We've had a pandemic, and you remember what life was like before the pandemic. We know what pandemic has done. We know we have to walk around with masks, social distancing, washing our hands, we've talking about vaccines, all these things which are physical, right? Physical attributes of the pandemic. What about the spiritual, the emotional? Why are people getting more depressed right now? Why is there sadness? Why is there so much anxiety? What is happening now that we cannot reach out to one another? We can't touch one another. We can't visit one another. What about people dying in hospitals without the support of loved one? What does this all mean to all of us? That's the topic. Reclaiming faith in a post-pandemic world. Mark your calendars. I'll be talking more about it in the coming weeks. Well, that does it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it. Listen, I told you to check out the show notes. On there also, you will find the Martin Luther King Jr. Retreat Archive. So everything we did last week is now in the archives. You have access to the sound files. You even have access to the Zoom meeting that took place as the final event. Do check it out and check out the show notes for all kinds of details. Listen, on behalf of the wonderful people who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical man, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath cut out.